Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach.
And I'm Madeline.
And this is our haphazard attempt at discussing Midnights, TS10. I am in shambles. Madeline, how are you comprehending all of this information that we've received? And no information as well. That's the other thing.
Well, here's what really kind of pissed me off. Like, I could go on and on. I'm shocked, whatever. But what really gets me is that this bitch really is not going to give us a fucking single. And that really kind of, that kind of grinds my fucking gears. I'm not going to lie to you.
You know, I think this leaves her very open to things leaking when you announce something so far ahead of time.
If you don't even give us a single, they're going to be hungrier for the information.
Well, so exactly. It's like, I mean, it's the bounty at a higher, higher rate. Right.
Exactly. I think it, speaking of, I mean, may as well just say, I think it probably will leak. And once again, I'm probably going to have to banish myself from social media. And I hate that shit. It's like, I'm sick of it. I'm an adult now. It's like,
you know what? I'm going to do that too. If that happens, I'm going to have to do it. I did it for Red. I was like, I'm not doing this. I have to let this come when it comes.
For an album called Midnights, one simply has to be listening for the first time at midnight when it properly comes out, not at 6 a.m., you know, because some fucko on your TL posted a link and you're at work, like eating it like a goblin. No,
I need to be, I want to savor it. It's like fine dining. Yeah, like I want the experience. I want my table laid. I want service.
After Folklore and Evermore, it's like, I mean, I enjoyed the releases of those albums so much because it was just like very, I don't know, not kosher. What's the word I'm thinking of?
Wholesome.
Wholesome. You know, so just like, it was just like perfect listening experience. I had no preconceived notions, et cetera, et cetera. Which, I mean, obviously with Midnight, it's not going to be exactly like that, but I don't know. I'm listening at midnight, boys, no matter what happens.
Well, some of us live in Singapore, so I have to listen at noon. At least it's a direct 12 hours, you know? Like, I'm still listening at 12. Yeah, well, I mean, 12?
It's still, close your curtains, light a candle and pretend.
Well, it's better for me practically because I'm going to make a reaction video, so I'll have all my natural light.
I have
that over the girlies, and then I have the whole day to edit it and get it up when those queens are sleeping. Yep. So.
Exactly.
I'll be capitalizing.
You know, pros and cons.
Yep. Those search results. So a little catch up. I think it's been a while since we posted. This should be no surprise to our regular listeners, but I think that we've had an influx of new people over the last couple of months, I would say. I've been doing a fair bit of plugging on my YouTube channel. So I think we're having some nice cross-pollination. But, you know, as grateful as we are to have many, many listeners, we're at 120K streams by now, Madeline.
Holy shit.
I know. We're going to have to start thinking about what we say. That's the problem. We can't just run our mouths.
Well, this is something that you and I have mentioned many times because both of us have no fucking clue about what we've said in the past. And additionally, neither of us
idea.
Are going to go in there and edit it out. So no, it doesn't even matter.
Blocked out. Yeah. I don't know what blocked the hell out. I've said over the time. And
I think if
hours.
We said anything too shocking, we would know by now because they were fucking on TikTok making a mockery out of you for saying barely anything.
Oh, yeah. So, wait till they find the podcast, baby.
Wait till
they
don't
have the attention span to listen to it, though. So they'd have to wait a while to get into the juice. But what I wanted to say, my message to the new fans was welcome and also leave me alone because I've been harangued day in and day out. My YouTube channel, my Instagram DMs, my Twitter, everywhere. Where's 2016? Where's 2016? Where's 2016? What you don't understand, girlies, is that 2016 has been looming over us like a bludgeon for years at this point. Years. We have said from the start that this is our Vietnam. This is our Afghanistan.
This is literally the storming of the beaches of Normandy.
It is traumatic for us to revisit it, but also it's traumatic because it just requires a high level of, I don't want to say analysis, that's maybe a stretch of what we do, although, you know, I do think we bring, you know, another dimension to our work, but, you know, it takes a lot of logistical coordination, and these recording sessions, girlies, we have to sit here for hours, we have to start and stop the Zoom, it's hard work, so I feel as though we should all just be grateful for the food that we receive, just in general life, yeah. but also
yeah, just
according life. To the podcast. Yeah. And know that the year format is spotty, as in like sometimes we'll go 6 months without doing a year. And that's because like it needs to be good. If we were just turning them out all the time, like we need to recall, Madeline and I need to process, like we've already been talking about what we're going to include in 2016, how we might go about it, but it's just not the time yet. Do you feel that it's time, Madeline?
I don't feel that it's time, especially considering what's going on, like, externally in the world, with Taylor. It's like, really, you want 2016 now? Like, right now, you want
new shit.
Yeah, we have new shit. Don't you want to listen to that?
Harassing actually makes it worse. It makes me want to procrastinate and does not bring 2016 anytime sooner to you. So that's just...
I mean, people were not... outside Van Gogh's house tapping on his windows.
No, they weren't saying, where's the starry fucking night? Where is it?
And had they been, we never would have had these beautiful works of art. So just think about that.
Or he would have had no ears.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, if you really want to try and influence 2016, our Buy Me a Coffee page is still up and running. So we're shaking the cup. If you want to spare some change and you want to harass, that is literally the only way that I will accept from now. It's going to be blocking soon. So I'm just letting everyone know. but yeah, so into this episode, we're going to be talking about TS10. It's so crazy that TS10 has a name. And I have to make an apology because I was banging my drum for months saying, you bitches are so crazy for thinking that TS10 is even on the menu. And here it is.
I was sort of like half and half. I was kind of like really thinking that we were going to get a re-record before we would get anything else, but then it was taking so long. And like, I know, I'm pretty sure, like I have this feeling that like going into the studio and re-recording her old stuff sort of like it emboldens her to make new stuff. Like it inspires her, creativity blooms. I mean, she's in there with like these producers and stuff. Like there's no way they're not getting sidetracked by new stuff all the time. So like, I wasn't thinking like TS10 is coming, but low key, I was like, if it did, I wouldn't be that surprised. So like when she made the announcement, I mean, it did shock me just because of how it happened. But like, I was like, you know what? This makes sense. It's, you know, it's a fall album release as we deserve, as we have as fought hard for the past, like, how long has it been since we've had a fall album release?
Oh,
and Evermore does not count.
4 years?
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been since Reputation.
Lover. Oh, wait, no, Lover came out in the summer. That's right.
Summer. Lover's the Reputation.
Outlier. Yeah. Yep. Lover is the outlier. That's where it all went wrong. You see, the juju was off.
It was off.
Gotta happen. Like Taylor's albums are Libras or Scorpios, period. Always.
Period.
That's what they are. And I am very glad that we're returning to the gospel by going back to fall release. It feels so strange to get back to this format though, after, like you said, the surprise releases, because it was fun to be on tenterhooks and like not really know what was coming anymore. In a way, I'm relieved that I can prepare myself for this, but I have a feeling that the information about this album is going to come in fucking drips and drabs. Like, we are going to be on a need to know basis. And in Taylor's opinion, we need to know nothing until about 2 weeks before the album comes out.
Yeah. I'm sort of wondering, like, because I'm thinking about Reputation also was sort of a different kind of release because it was, there will be no explanation. There will only be Reputation, blah, blah, blah. I'm kind of thinking like, what is she going to do? An interview? Is she going to do a magazine cover? Is she going to do this? Is she going to do that?
Well, she's not going to be on Ellen. She's not going to be on
she's
Ellen.
She's not going to be on fucking Ellen. Demon she will is not dead. Be on Ellen. The evil has been defeated. But I think probably it'll be similar to the Red album, the Red re-release, I should say. But I don't know. I'm kind of like, I kind of feel that she's not going to tell us anything, which is her right, but
her right evil. And our suffrage.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't expect her to attend the VMAs truly, because as I've said many times, that is a rotting cultural institution. It is so boring. It's so overproduced. It's full of nothings and nobodies.
Nothings and nobodies. But this year, I have to say, they were in the fucking room desperate, crying, begging, please can we have Blackpink? Please can we give Nicki Minaj a major award? Please can Taylor show up? Like somebody, something,
Taylor
anything.
Elevates this shit. Whenever she goes to she something, does. They make it good. Because they get a better budget, I bet. Because she brings in viewers.
She brings in fucking viewers.
I woke up and I saw a picture of the dress. And I was like, Mermaid Swift, at it again. You almost got me this time. And then I refreshed and I was like, oh my God, Mermaid Swift is walking the red carpet. Mermaid Swift is Taylor Swift's evil twin. She has arrived at the VMA red carpet.
Taylor said, I know that you all think that Mermaid Swift is all just an AI bot, but I gotta tell you something. She's inside of me. Like, it's one of her alter egos.
She lives.
But I will say, like, as for the, like, what is being, like, shown to us, like, through her looks, like, for the vibe of the album, I, you know, it's like, think about what she wore to the Grammys for, like, Folklore, you know what I mean? Like, it kind of does represent, like, what the vibe of the record is going to be when she shows up, it or does. When she wore her cheeks out in that little romper thing for 1989. Oh, it sets
the tone, and this tone.
But it's like, my this God, tone this tone is Ooh. Very interesting. It's like, it's serve, it's sexy. Slay.
Chandelier.
Call it a slay. Chandelier, money, body. Luxury, body. I mean, I'm sort of, because I can't decide if this record is going to be more like on the same wavelength as Folklore and Evermore, or if it's going to be more, I'm not going to say pop, because I think that it's going to be all over the place, if that makes any sense. Like, I don't think it's going to be like Red, and I don't think it's going to be like Lover, but I think it's going to be like, it's the theme. It's not about the sound of the music. The theme.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? You know exactly what I mean. Like Red in that way.
Yeah. Like Red, in that it's like a chaotic kind of smorgasbord of different things that are united by a thesis. Right, and exactly. We all know that that's my favorite kind of album. So I'm very excited for that. But
yeah.
I think we should backtrack and discuss
the
VMAs before we get into
our Here we go.
Predictions.
Right.
So poor Madeline keeps getting attacked by Dylan O'Brien content. It just...
It's really hard. I'm not kidding. Like, it's honestly, it's probably the worst thing ever.
They're besties, Madeline. They're like friends.
It's kind of hard for me to wrap my mind around. I mean, you know, you spend so many years. It's like, I'm lucky that this is happening to me when I'm a grown adult. If this has happened to me 5 years ago,
Dylan, fingers in me now, tweet down.
Carried out in forever. A fucking stretcher. Like, I don't think I would have been able to physically survive the content that we're getting now. Luckily, I am more calm than married. I would be. Yeah, married, period. But as it is, like, it's still, like, it's a lot. Like, I can't even process.
It's not real. It feels not real at times. And I feel like, I don't know, watching her at the VMAs, I felt as though, now this is just like a general comment on her demeanor the entire night. It was like, she seemed so comfortable in her own skin again, and very confident and assured of herself, but also like revved the fuck up. Like, she has the fire in her eyes, the joie de vivre. Like, she's hungry for something. And I'd love to know what it is. Like, what's the move here? What's the plan?
She came to that VMAs acting like it was 20 fucking 13, baby. Mm. Like, she had not yet been broken by the world. She was ready to come out and show everybody what she's got. That's literally what I felt like watching, like, with the audience cams and everything, like watching how she was. Oh my God,
yeah.
It was just like so reminiscent. And I mean, maybe it's just because we haven't been to a award show like this since COVID happened. You know what I mean? That seems so like,
even the Lover award show appearances, for example, felt very tame, didn't they? They felt very like neutered.
Well, she was wearing like
juvenile clothes. There was not a serve in the bag. Yeah. I mean, and then Reputation, she didn't really do promo. She only really went to award shows at the tail end of it. And, you know, she started out serving with Reputation. She didn't really carry it all the way through, but she could have served. She didn't, but she could have. This is new. This is new. Like, it's new, but it's old. It's the 1989 bravado paired with the like wise wisdom of someone who's like been there and done that. It's very, very scary.
Well, let me tell you something. She will never change which you will never see the same either.
Shut up.
Oh shit. And honestly, it was never more applicable than it was today.
Yeah, led the charge making fun of that saying. But it means something, Madeline.
It means something. It means something. It has very deep like personal meanings to all of us Swifties. And I think it's time that we brought it back.
Yeah,
I want to see it on the TL again.
Yes, come on, bring it back. She'll never change, but she'll never stay the same. I love that quote so much. It's so stupid and yet profound.
There's something to it, man. Shakespeare.
So let's discuss the outfit. Oh my God. Like, we just haven't been served like this in so long. It's Oscar De La Renta. I'm very happy to see her working with him again, because I feel like her working on a collaboration with a designer like for a long period of time that understands her and kind of gets where she's going is going to be good for her general like public appearance, because as we know, she can serve. She has all the raw materials required to serve, but something just happens and one part of the scenario always gets botched. Now, that was no exception with this outfit. We had the hair, which was kind of a botch, but not entirely, but like it could have been a little bit better. But on the whole, Oscar De La Renta, I think, really knows how to dress Taylor and knows how to give her the drama that she deserves. He did her gold gown at the Grammys. I think that was for the year that she won for Safe and Sound. So before she won for Mean. And he also did the Asian inspired, like the Chinese kind of Cheongsam fit that she wore to the Cats premiere. And this is just, it's a complete and entire serve. And she's a new makeup artist, which I think really made a difference too. Pat McGrath, legend, the woman, the myth, the legend, who, you know, really did an amazing eye look on her. The hair, but everything else was so good that I can overlook it. I'm totally fine. What do you think, Madeline?
I do agree about the hair. I think that like compared to the whole outfit, it was kind of that's all you could come flat. Up with. It was flat. It just a stupid little twist in the back. And especially now that she's serving hair, like she has hair. And why aren't we fucking putting, I mean, that outfit to me said big hair, but whatever. It's none of my business, because then later on in the night, she did serve us hair, but it was just kind of like, a mop on top of her head. Like she just kind of brushed it and said, let's go.
It looked like it had been in a bun all night long, and it had.
Yeah, it had. So, but anyway, I mean, yes, all the dress itself is fucking, I mean, come on. Nobody else was dressed like that. She won.
To me, that's up there, like one of her best red carpet looks ever. I would enter that into like at least the top 10, if not the top 5 of like my favorite looks. I was truly bowled over, head empty. Like she just looked the way that it draped on her back. I've never noticed her back before, but it was just looking so wonderful. We had leg on display. It was beautiful.
Leg on display, back on display. I really wonder like what was going on like underneath the dress, in that like how, like she must have been taped into that fucking thing, like you would not fucking believe. Yeah,
You could see her belly button though. That's what was so weird about the dress, was that it was so sheer but still demure, and I don't really understand how she manages to do this every time. Like every time she does,
it's because she's
a little
thin.
Sexy. Oh, you think
it's because she's thin? Yeah, no, period. Like literally, if she imagine that dress on tits and ass, like,
well,
seriously,
it couldn't. It's not.
It just couldn't be, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I think that's what it is. It's like she does. I mean, I don't want to comment.
She's a clothes
too much.
Horse. We've said this before. Yeah. She's a clothes horse. Yeah. She was made to wear clothes.
And again, this takes us back to going back to fucking 2013, 2014. She is cooking up something. And I keep thinking about that lover, that quote from, not the lover quote, but it's from Miss Americana, where she says, I will never have this kind of success again. And I was just like, oh, is she thinking that she's going to try to grab it one last time again with this record? Because I mean, for a while it kind of seems like she kind of like let it go, like with Folklore and Evermore. She was like, I don't care about being on the charts, I just care about making my art, and this is the perfect time to do it, blah blah blah. But then I think she was like completely shooketh by the fact that, I don't know, for example, All Too Well 10 went number one. That's fucking insane. And like all this other shit that happened, SNL, etc., etc.
Well, and also she's been managing to attract a really young fan base as of late. Like I've noticed this even in my like YouTube comments and stuff. Like a lot of the people that are seeking out Taylor content online right now are teenagers. Like they are in middle school. They are in, they're like 16, 17, 18. Like this is the new target demographic, right? Because they're the people that buy stuff. They're the people that stream and chart and all of that and care about that kind of stuff and can be easily hoodwinked into believing whatever, you know, spiel we've decided to go on for 2022 and onwards. But she's definitely appealing. She's having a renaissance of some, not to make it Beyonce, but like she is having a revival that is very unique.
Revival
Selena Gomez. She's attracting a new audience. And I feel like this is so rare for women in the music industry. It's like usually maybe they take the Madonna route and they just kind of like age into diva stardom, legendariness. Taylor is still relevant, and she's not just relevant, like she is the music industry. Like a Taylor release will still have every single artist that is scheduled to put out a record, that album, scrambling to move their shit because they know that Taylor's just going to monopolize the conversation. And I mean, what are we, how many years are we into this, into her career now? What, like 15 more, 16? Yeah. Like this is, it's the longevity of it all is quite surprising. And to your point, I think it's surprised her.
I think it surprised her. And I do think that there's a facet of Taylor's personality that I think that she is, and I think that this could happen to anybody. Like I'm not knocking her at all, but I think that she gets that kind of success and it feeds the beast. And the beast wants more. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Starved.
The beast demands more.
Well, Taylor lives for the applause. She's told us a million times. That's never going to change. She wants the applause.
That's the kind of personality type that you have to be somebody like her. So I'm not saying it's bad by any stretch of the imagination because it feeds us as well. But I'm just saying, I think that she is latching on to what she's got going on right now. And why the fuck shouldn't she? Sell it out. I think Midnights is gonna blow everybody out of the water, if I'm being totally honest with you.
Well,
I think she says, I'm serving, and you will hear me on the radio again.
Well, I think in Miss Americana, those comments she made about like gracefully stepping aside and like writing other people's songs and knowing when her time is up, that was fake news to me. That was like, again, Miss Americana was literally a press release. Like there was nothing, almost nothing extremely genuine about it. But that is particularly inauthentic, just knowing Taylor's personality. Like you think she's going to roll over and lie down and hand the crown to Olivia Rodrigo? You are dreaming.
No.
Keep dreaming. She is going to fight tooth and nail to stay relevant. She was only saying that because I felt that she was a little insecure post cancellation. There was like too quick a rush to be like, I'm okay again after Snakegate, which is why we keep hearing about it, because she has not processed it yet. But I feel like now with the re-recordings have given her a whole new lease on creativity. That's my theory, is that like you said, going into the studio, going back makes you want to go forward. It makes you want to, it reminds you of, you know, it connects you with who your younger artist self was. It's very like sentimental and intense and emotional. And that's definitely the vibe that I'm getting from Midnight so far, because the imagery, like, did you see, you saw the new versions of the album cover. It's moody. It's moody. Downcast. It's not like 1989 vibing, I'm a Victoria's Secret model. It's like, it's Folklore Evermore, but like make it a little bit more high fashion, give it a little more drama, brush your hair, put on some makeup.
To me, it is very, I'm noticing a lot of like old, I don't like six, seven, 80s, 70s, 70s. Like there's just something about it that is, I'm struggling to put my thoughts into words. It's like going back in time.
It's Twiggy, it's Maud
going back in time, but like also thinking about like her working on the re-recording, having this whole theme that's like old school-ish, like her using a landline phone, for example. Like, do you understand what I'm getting at?
Time travel.
Old piano. Time travel. Like maybe we're reading too much into it and it's just a mood that she's trying to curate and it doesn't really have anything to do. Yeah, we know her.
We know her.
Like this, the vibe means something. I just don't think that we're going to know what it is until it happens.
Did you see the movie Last Night in Soho with Anya Taylor-Joy?
No. No, I didn't.
Okay. I need you to like Google it after this and look at the visuals, because I really think that's the vibe that Taylor is going for, visually at least, with this.
Interesting. Interesting.
It's very clear that she's going kind of in that direction. I'm getting like Britpop, Beatles, Abbey Road vibes, Maud, but like the girl version.
That quote that I had disregarded when I read it, because we didn't even have the announcement at that point, but somebody was like, Taylor's friends say that she's working on new music and it's like Stevie Nicks, Fleetwood Mac shit. And I was like, whatever, you wish. But I don't know.
Yeah, we wish. That's the thing. Yeah. We wish.
Yeah.
That would be so interesting to me. I mean, I have no fucking clue what's going to happen, but
yeah.
Wow, we just went on a tangent.
Yeah, we were just fucking.
Back to the VMAs. So the red carpet footage. Do you know that one video? Actually, there's two videos, Madeline. The video of her walking absolutely shanked me. That I was like ceremonially gutted by that. It was insane. I was speechless, in tears almost.
It was a pretty incredible video. I mean, all of the videos of her on the carpet were pretty fucking incredible.
Slow-mo,
I mean,
come one. On. You know what I'm
With Dylan O'Brien in the background. Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about.
She's walking up. She's walking up. And then there's the one where she's serving face. She's glitching. She's doing her like glitch in the Matrix, cyborg Taylor face, like giving shots to all the cameras, like a generous queen. But she just like briefly makes eye contact with the camera that's filming.
I know what you're talking about.
And it is, oh my God, it's scary.
It's pretty scary. It's scary.
Her eyes.
Literally.
It's that fire.
She's a Terminator. She's a Terminator. She literally is a Terminator.
She said, I'm showing up and all of you fucking bitches are going to bow down.
And they did.
And they did. Yeah. And they did. She was on full cyborg mode this evening. I loved it. She seemed very happy to be there. Very confident. Dylan was vibing the entire night. You could just tell that he just felt
that's
absolutely
blessed. That's all he fucking does.
To be in her presence. All
he fucking does. He was, something that I really appreciate about Dylan is that I don't think he has that much of an ego. I think that he was absolutely shook to his fucking
core. He's just some guy. And I mean that in the
He's literally aware of the fact that he is at his core just some fucking dude. Like, really. Yeah.
I also love how Taylor like did not invite any of her female besties to this, because she was like, I'm the only one that can serve cunt at this event. Get away from me. No Camila Cabello, no Halsey, no one, none of the usual puppets trailing behind her. Zero. Yes. Just the guy. Sadie Sink, not invited.
I was wondering about that. I wonder if she just couldn't come. Or what?
In a way, in a certain sense, Taylor Swift attended the 2002 VMAs with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Shit.
In a spiritual manner.
She took him.
And he always said she was, you know, immature. Well, look at her now. Look, did that look immature?
Did that look immature to you, little boy?
Are you scared? Wind in her hair, running scared. So I thought it was super cute and also nostalgic and so weird to see her doing her horrible dancing. Great that the dancing has not gotten any better. I love it. Stay true to yourself. Never change, queen, not for anybody. And to see her lip syncing to Super Bass, that like brought a tear to my eye.
It was special. I mean, again, something about everything that happened was nostalgic. I don't know what happened. Like it was just like
Renaissance. The VMAs, really, though.
She owns the VMAs. They tried to take her ownership away from her, as we know. But the fact of the matter is, the moment that she had that quote unquote ruined her life, depending on how you look at it, actually sort of gave her the crown of the VMAs.
Well, don't tell her that. She would hate to hear it, but she knows that it's true. This is the problem. If you think about it, like a lot of the iconic moments of the VMAs really revolve around Taylor in the last couple of years. Not just that. I mean, Look What You Made Me Do video premiere broke the world. That was a huge get for the VMAs. She didn't even show up and she had the world shaking and Katy Perry was hosting. It was a cyber attack that she did.
Wait a second. Katy Perry was hosting that VMAs?
Yes. That was the year that Katy Perry was like zooming in like on a moon man, like just being so odd. And Taylor really, was like, that's funny.
None of this is ringing a bell. That's how like deepfake reputation was. Like she just edited herself in to the point where the actual show, it was nothing. Like exactly. I'm shocked by it.
But that's her power. She owns the VMAs, the girl squad. Like, and when the VMAs invite her, my God, do they roll out the red carpet for her? It is there. They are like, what can we do to make you feel comfortable, queen? Would you like to walk on a carpet of human skin? She says, yes, I want that. And they go and start skinning people for it.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, what are you going to do? Nobody else there. I mean, there were some big names there, but it's like, I mean, who? Blackpink, period. Great.
The
but
only
like,
person that could have upstaged her was Beyonce. And as we know, Beyonce and Taylor have that like agreement in place where they will try not to overlap at public events when either of them are doing promo for a specific record because they don't want to steal each other's shine. Two generous, humble queens.
Too true.
Two generous queens. I mean, they know that they, you know, they, everybody says that they secretly hate each other. No, I think they have a deep respect for each other.
No, that there's anybody who says that is just lying to themselves because they want to hate Taylor or Beyonce, vice versa. Mm-hmm. Like, come
they
on.
They each occupy an impenetrable lane. Like you just can't, nobody can do what they do, including each other to themselves.
Right. Exactly.
But she wins two awards, which we love to see. She wins Video of the Year. And, you know, I thought that that was it. Because after she did that, she went away and everyone was like, oh, she went to the bathroom. People who were there at the VMAs were tweeting because she went to the bathroom. She's gone. And I was like,
I stopped like being on my TL. I had dinner. Like I logged off and had dinner.
Me too.
Because I thought she was gone.
Though, because this bitch has rolled out of bed approximately 3 times this year. She would not just go to the VMAs to collect a VMA because what's a VMA to her at this point? It's like a gift card. Like she doesn't need that. Right. There had to have been a point, and there was. That was the thing that we missed. So she comes back and she accepts, I think it was Video of the Year, which might be a stretch. Was All Too Well Video of the Year? I mean, it was Video of the Century, obviously, but like, don't know.
I don't know.
She accepts the award and she announces, she says, my brand new album at midnight. And it was like 11:30 at this point. I was in complete despair. I didn't know what to do with myself.
Here's the thing. I thought I was under no, because what she said was she was like, there's more to come at midnight. I thought she was going to release a single. Imagine my fucking surprise when I log on and there's nothing. Just a fucking, well, literally nothing,
a because
you couldn't get into the site. You couldn't get into the site for 10 minutes because everybody and their dog was on it. So when I finally did come on, I had to go onto Instagram.
Yeah, that's what I did too. I had to go through Instagram as well. And I was like, because I was sitting there refreshing the fucking site, looking at this stupid countdown. And of course, Taylor Nation, per usual, falling at the last hurdle. They just can't do it. They can't do anything.
They can't keep up. They literally, I want to see the Taylor Nation room. And it's just like a cubicle somewhere with a water cooler and 3 kids desperately on their laptops trying to make something happen. And they're not
iPhone 4s. No budget.
I think Taylor honestly bones her entire team a lot. Mm-hmm. I think she's like, hey guys, I want to do this. Are we doing this? They're like, oh shit.
Did you see that video of Taylor sitting in the audience, minding her own business? Tree Payne comes storming, clip-clopping like horse. Like, what was it? Like,
in your Herman Munster shoes.
In your Herman Munster shoes. And she whispers something very frantically in Taylor's ear, and her face, her mouth drops. Yeah. She's shook by whatever this information is. What the fuck possibly could have been going on? I mean, she was in such a wild environment with a bunch of other celebrities. So my only thing could have been like, maybe it was something business related. Did someone fumble, like, I don't know, a website thing? Was it like, I mean, it could have been anything, but like, Madeline, what do you, if you had to guess, what do you think she was telling her?
Honestly, my first guess would be like, I don't.
She looked disgusted.
Something about, I think somebody was, maybe somebody was there. I don't know.
Yeah, she but wasn't like happy. Nobody was that's there for sure. That, she was not happy. It seemed like Tree was giving her a heads up, like letting her know.
I don't know, maybe It's like, Taylor, Dylan is doing cocaine in the bathroom right now. You're like, what?
Like, don't go and blow your nose on a stream can by accident. Now's not the time.
Yeah.
So she announces TS10, Midnights. It's 13 tracks, we find out, divided into side A and side B. I'm not sure if that's like a vinyl thing or if that's like a thematic thing. I think it might be thematic because it seems to be on the CD cover art too. And yeah, I mean, I guess, Madeline, what do you think of we've kind of discussed this, but what do you think of the cover art and the aesthetic? How does it stack up with the prior two and Lover?
You know what? I'm going to say something that is going to be unpopular among the masses, but she is not the absolute best at choosing album covers. From what I've seen, there's already about six other way better fucking pictures. The picture of her on the landline phone is a better fucking picture. She flops at choosing album covers. I mean, the aesthetic of it, it's like Tumblr, like 2014. Do you understand what I mean?
It's very, you know what I hate to it's say it, I say it all the time. It's very clean. Lana Del Rey.
I'll take that, but even Lana has better album covers.
Oh, Lana definitely has better album covers when she's not doing pick art stuff. Definitely. I think I like it a lot. I love the picture of her with the lighter. I just think it's so funny and out of character because like this bitch has never smoked a day in her life. I mean, she has
I'm loving the eye
makeup.
She never
admit it publicly. The eye makeup is amazing. I love, she doesn't really go for a strategic messy look very often. It's always clean and simple and sharp. And this is like, it's smudgy, it's weary, it's tired. It's midnight, baby. It's the after party.
Somebody in that room understood the fucking assignment in the fucking dressing room. They were like,
someone
advised her. Never her. What I'm saying is I'm not saying they're all bad, but it's just like when an album cover doesn't land, she's spotty. I mean, I'm just not surprised that it's not that great. I actually didn't think this is how much I was unimpressed by it. When I saw the post, I didn't think that was the album cover. I thought it was just like, like a vibe check, like an announcement thing. Like, here's a picture from the shoot and here's this. And everyone's like, the cover. Promo. I was like, oh, that's the cover. Huh. Okay. Well, here we go.
I was very, I was very confused. It seemed to me like an Apple Music promo pick. I was like, oh, she's going to be on Beats Radio with like Zane Lowe. That's what's going on. But then I swiped into my surprise. It was an album release. I've warmed up to it now. I can see what she's doing and what she's going for. I like that it's different from all her other records. And I like that it's very spare and sparse. I'm kind of intrigued by that. It's different. That's what I will give her. And I will always award points for anything that like deviates from the norm, even if I don't think it's the best thing in the world. So I'm a fan of the cover in general. It is certainly better than the Lover album cover. That's for sure.
Well, here's
the last big pop moment, I suppose.
Here's the fucking thing that a lot of people are talking about, which I have also been thinking about a lot, is the track titles. A lot of people think that they're just going to be called track one, track two, track three.
When she showed the blurred out vinyl on TikTok, you could see that the track numbers were a lot longer. Like the length of the tracks were all different.
Aha. So okay. It's not mystery solved. I think it would have been interesting and I think it would have really fed into the vibe, but I don't think
streaming?
She could let go of titling her songs, like call it what it is.
It would be really if she called track five track five. That would be a serve.
It would be that's the one thing that I think would be an ultimate serve.
That would be amazing. That would be such a like a meta Taylor Swift cinematic universe moment.
I don't know. She's just like so detail oriented. It's hard for me to imagine her. A lot of people are really sold on it, but come on, track one, track two, track three. How do you traverse conversations it's too messy to me. Like, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I think
trying to figure out what vibe we're going for with this album. Like again, because as we mentioned, the visuals don't really match the sense of occasion that she's built around this, because it really to me feels like this is going to be a moment, like a big pop moment, whether that means Cruel Summer Part 2, probably not. It's not going to be like synth pop like we know it, but it's giving me 1989 vibes. It's got a pretty clear, unique visual direction. It's got a really concise and tight track list. When was the last time we had a 13-track record from her? No bonus
tracks. The tight track list is a very good sign to me, because it means that she was discerning when she was picking focused. The songs, because you know she's up in there writing music all the goddamn time. But I it makes me feel like, because with Lover, you know, there are songs on Lover that totally fit the theme and totally make sense, and there are those that don't, and that could have been honestly cut from the like cutting room floor. So I think it's going to be a better album than Lover. I mean, you don't have to try that hard, but I mean, call it what it is.
Well, also it was a strategic move, because like longer albums stream better. So the fact that she's sacrificing, you know, usually she loves to capitalize and maximize every opportunity to make an extra coin. So the fact that she's not doing that, and she's actually going a little rogue and doing something closer to an EP than an album. I mean, it's not an EP, but Taylor Swift standards, this is an EP. And I think that is, yes, you're right. That it bodes very well for us that she's being really focused and considered about this. And again, the confidence, the bravado that she had in her eyes at the VMAs. Like, I just have a feeling that she knows. It was like 1989. Like, she knew she had bet on a winning dog, and she was like, it hadn't come out. Nobody had heard anything, but she knew inside in her brain. She was sitting on all the material, and she knew that it was going to be a fucking smash. And I think that this is the same.
I think that she knows this shit is going to hit, and it's going to hit hard. And I think that we didn't really see that a lot with Folklore and Evermore, because I don't think she did know that.
I don't think she intended for it to hit hard. She was just kind of like, I'm feeling creative and I'm going to try something new. And I think that Midnights obviously is something new, but I think that it's like, because she's been going, you know, taking the road less traveled back into the past. She's like, all right, let me narrow my vision and do what I know how to do, which is make a really clear and concise vision and sell shit. Let me combine that with this new creative spirit that I have and try and do both at the same time. Like, can I do something different while doing kind of the same thing? And that's what's so exciting to me about this, is that it's a return to form, but she's different now.
She's different now. That's the main thing. I mean, to me, Lover was like a simulation. I can't explain that. I think God intervened and cut that short. Well, 1989, I think that finally 1989 is going to receive her sister record, because I would argue for Reputation sometimes, but at the same time, it almost doesn't really mesh too close. That well.
Honestly, they're too close to be sister records.
They're too close. I think that, and it's like 1989 was a crisp, clean album too. It was a shorter record than what she would normally do. It had a very, I mean, the visuals of 1989, like I'm looking at some of the Polaroids right now, and I got to tell you, there's something clicking about the Polaroids from 1989 and the visuals that we have from Midnight.
I'm
so
telling
far.
You, I got this vibe. I looked at it and I was like, oh my God, it's 1989 part two, the grown up version.
She's coming.
I always said that I thought that Folklore was, if anything, the closest to being 1989 sister spiritually, because of the fact that it was pretty much front to back, like consistently good. It was very, it was like hit after hit after hit. Evermore is spiritually similar to Red. I think that you're right. This is going to be 1989's 20.
Yeah, I think that we're in for a wild fucking ride. But what I really am sort of wondering is if she is ever going to do a first single for the record. A lot of people think no. A lot of people think, no, this isn't that kind of album. I don't know that.
No, she wouldn't announce it this far in advance if she wasn't giving something. It might not be for another month, but we're getting a lead single for sure. We are at least getting a lead single.
I definitely think, like, with the visuals that she has so far, I mean, I would shit myself if I received a music video that had anything like the visuals that we've seen. I would absolutely go bananas. Like, that is, it's too good. And it fits her, like, look so well.
So I guess we can discuss the letter that accompanied the album. I didn't really process the letter when I read it. It was a bunch of words.
Sure, whatever, queen.
But what I will say is I'm so fucking excited about the conceit for this album. Like, I am just absolutely head over heels. It is such a Taylor Swift thing. It is Swiftian by nature. The part that I thought was, you know, most relevant for us to discuss was, this is a collection of music written in the middle of the night, Scream, a journey through terrors and sweet dreams. Everybody clapped. For all of us who have tossed and turned and decided to keep the lanterns lit and go searching, relatable content, hoping that just maybe when the clock strikes 12, we'll meet ourselves. That's interesting. It makes sense that she's arriving here, you know, after digging up all these old wounds, because she made it a point to say that she, these were about midnights from throughout her life. This is so interesting because all of her autobiographical albums have been like contemporaneous. It's like what's been going on in my life right now. This is like, because she's in that retrospective mood, she's reaching back and making new stuff from an old perspective, which is so cool and interesting to me, how she's like toggling back and forth between the timelines and literally revising the record a little bit. She's like, I have more to say, actually. I'm not done on certain events. And I am so excited. Like, I'm wondering, is side A and side B about two different phases in her life? Like, what is the, what's going to be the thematic separation there? Is it going to be like, that was then and this is now? I'm very confused about that. But it's a smart conceit to do, because it also allows her to be like, if I write a breakup song or I write a song criticizing a boy, it's not about Joe. You can't say it's about Joe. In fact, you can't even assign it to one person, because it could be about anything, anyone. It's like folklore, but this time real.
See, I was just about to say that. I think this is just like folklore, except this time real. And I think that, because if you think about like the albums that we've had in the past that were autobiographical, diaristic, whatever you want to call it, we always had like a framework to go on with, like, who was she dating last?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, I think that a lot of this is going to be true. I think that a lot of it is going to be diaristic, but we're not going to fucking know who the hell, unless she's getting specific.
Well, that's our job, baby.
That's our job. That's literally why we're here. So I'm really excited, because there are informations that I would like to know.
So shall we discuss what Midnight's Madeline would like to hear from?
I've got some interesting things. Okay. Number one, sad girl on a boat night. Number fucking one. Because if you remember,
what happened?
Because listen, Taylor was alone on a boat leaving the island. And where was Harry Styles in the hot tub with hot babes? That's where he was.
And she left on the boat, I believe, in the early morning. So it must have been something that happened the night before around, I don't know, midnight.
I want to be fed. I want to be fed that information so bad.
Oh, I need it. I need to know it. Can you, I mean, I just got so titillated at the prospect of like having these historical gaps, things that we've said about, like, we've been like, oh, we'll never know. Getaway car. Well, I have a feeling, maybe, that we're about to get a little bit more color.
You're telling me. I'm like, literally, one of my ones is Tom Hiddleston.
Tell me what else is on your list.
Tom Hiddleston taking his ailing Nana on one last walk on the beach at sunset.
And Taylor Taylor Swift wears open toe shoes on a rocky beach. Why?
But like, I want to know more about the Tom Hiddleston Taylor romance, because I think that was a romance that she had that was very, I mean, it was a getaway car, but it was also very like of the moment. Like, she would never do that now. Like, even
that
if
that was like a different person, she was in crisis.
That was a different person. Another one I have is when she was alone on an island with Calvin Harris. Gotta know what happened there.
So the album, that song is just gonna be like 3 minutes of screaming.
And then also, this was like the only other one I could think of, but VMA night, like the night when everything went bad and she was crying in Taylor Lautner's arms. I think that there is a wealth of emotion on that night. And I know like a lot of people would find that kind of like, who cares, dumb baby bitch, but I'm interested. I want to know things
that we don't know from before. I don't want to hear her now complaining about how she's scared of being canceled again. That's not really interested in that. I am interested in her inhabiting her old self. That is super interesting to me.
I think that we're going to get some juice on things that we're not even aware of.
We're going to be shaken to our very core. I think that some nights that I would like a little bit more perspective on, I think we need a little bit more on the masters, the betrayal, the
You know, there were some midnights that she was up late.
Well, when she says turning. That she woke up to the news, again, I just don't believe her. I don't believe that part of the story. I think that she knew in advance. I don't think she knew far in advance, but I think she might have known the night before and spent the night crafting her little post that came up, because that post was very eloquent and it was very considered and deliberate and thought through. There's no way that she got the news and 2 minutes later had a story up, because that's literally what happened. So I right. think there's some context and some color there that we need. I also think that we are going to have a couple of Grammy night recollections. So I think Red losing Album of the Year, ooh, we might get a midnight song from that, because she went home sad and she ate In-N-Out and she hung out by herself with her cats. There's something there. There's something there. And I think there's also something from the night that she won 1989 Album of the Year. Because remember when she said she felt like she was standing on top of a mountain, yep. and she looked around yep. and felt like I she had no one to share it with? I think yeah. that probably is a midnight moment too. I'm wondering, is there space for there to be like happy midnights? And I think that there
Dude,
are,
see, listen,
but the visual, the visuals are not hinting at that.
Well, here, but she says in the fucking whatever the hell, she says, terrors and sweet dreams.
Terrors yeah.
and sweet dreams. I think, well, if you think about it, there's a lot of midnights where you stay up all night with somebody, like a new love. You know, you're talking all night or you're having sex mm-hmm. or whatever the hell you're doing. I don't know. So I think that there's something there. And like when we were also talking about like songs that already exist, that already have like the midnight's vibe to them, unbeknownst to them in their creation. But honestly, when I was making the list, I had a lot of like happier songs on here because I feel yeah. like, well, also like the, like one of them that I had was like Enchanted, because I feel yes, like that's such I had that a midnight too. Song. Yep.
I had that too.
And it's like,
that's
not
like a coming
sad.
Home from the party and you have to write everything right. down lest exactly. you forget it. Yep. And it's like a treasured, precious moment. I think it's an immediacy thing. It's like an intimacy yeah. thing. It doesn't have to be sad. And I've seen some brain dead takes on the TL being like, well, it looks like it's going to be a sad album. So your hope for it being a big pop moment is over. It's like, have you not heard of the entire genre of music that is sad dancing on the dance floor?
Like
crying your heart out.
Like
Dancing on My Own by Robin. Heard of it?
They've never heard
of it. Cruel Summer. Heard of it? These idiots.
These bitches act like they've never even listened to a Taylor Swift album.
They don't get it.
It's like
they
the folklore and Evermore broke their fucking brains. Dude, you're going to tell me that Forever and Always, which is a bop. Let's start there. You didn't cry in your bedroom to Forever and Always while dancing at the same time? You're not. Well,
they didn't
not the
because
same.
They weren't there when it came out.
We're not the same.
Do you want to go through our list of songs that we made of yes. midnight songs? Yes. I'll do mine yes. and then you can tell me if any of them are the same.
Okay.
So I went by album. So for Fearless, I put Breathe and Forever and Always. Duh.
Perfect. Okay, cool.
From Duh. Debut, I was kind of like Teardrops, actually. Teardrops has a very
oh, that's a good
stillness
one.
In the middle of the night feeling to it. For Speak Now is kind of a midnight album, to be honest. Yeah. It's like Confession. So I put Back to December, Last Kiss, yes. and Enchanted, all three mm-hmm. of those. For yep. Red, I put I Knew You Were Trouble as an example of like songs that were born in the middle of the night, because she said as much about the yeah. creation of that song. And it was initially very sad and very slow. But then when she got into the studio, it became like a big thing. Also from Red, Nothing New is probably the most compelling yeah. example, and something close to what I'm hoping we're going to get more of on Midnights. Also Better Man and All Too Well, which I think are obvious. And then for 1989, I put All You Had to Do Was Stay, because she literally said that that song came from a dream. And I Wish You Would, which is about like pacing, again, yep. as so many of her songs are, about pacing your room at 2 a.m. and thinking. Midnight for me is the witching hours. It's not necessarily like 12. It's between the hours of like 12 and 5 a.m. So I Wish You yep. Would counts as there. I put Wildest Dreams as a question mark. I wasn't quite sure. For Reputation, I just had Delicate. I think that's kind of in the same way as Enchanted is a midnight song. Delicate is as well. It's like coming home from the bar and not really knowing where it's going, but wanting it to go well. From Lover, actually quite a lot of midnight songs on Lover. I put Cornelius Street, The Archer, and Cruel Summer.
Interesting.
And then from, I think Folk Evermore is like kind of hard to tell.
I barely put any from those on there.
Mirrorball, okay, just because yep, it's a very yep. frank, it's like I'm looking at myself in the mirror moment. And also The Lakes.
Oh yeah. Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah. Totally.
Those are my midnight songs. What are yours, Madeline? Any crossovers?
Okay, mine are not as organized as yours. I was just like laying in bed and like thinking about it, and whenever they came to me, I just put them down. The very first one that I put down was "I Almost Do."
I think that yes, that is a midnight song. Sitting in the chair by the window.
Yeah, exactly. And then I also put, maybe this is controversial, but I put "I Bet You Think About Me" on there too. As like the sister song to "I Almost Do," which I
I think those songs were written at the same time, to be honest. Mm-hmm. That was a one go.
They're way too similar. And then I put "Sad, Beautiful, Tragic."
Oh yes. Yes.
I put "This Is Me Trying" as well.
Mm.
And then here's my dark horse. The very first night I put as a midnight song.
You're cuckoo.
Reminiscing, thinking. It's not cuckoo. Nostalgia, reminiscing. It makes sense. It makes sense. But this just ties into my whole thing.
Yeah.
That there's gonna be what some fucking bangers.
No, yeah. I put a lot of bangers on my list. I had a lot of bangers on my list.
But you didn't put "The Very First Night," which I think is the ultimate midnight song, as we will come to discover.
Message in a bottle, midnight song.
Well, actually.
Probably. You know, the other side of the midnight songs is there are songs that you wake up and you write in the middle of the night, and then you realize, okay, I was on, yeah, it was like, I took a sleeping pill and I was like fucked up.
But you're already in the studio. You're already in the studio and it's already happening.
And you just have to, you just have to you just go with it.
Yeah, anyway. You just have to go with it. Then I put "If This Was a Movie," T.
Oh my God, how did I forget her?
Yep.
Ladies
and gentlemen, her, she.
She, it, they.
I put "Nothing New," same as you. That one's really obvious to me. I do have a couple from debut. I put "Cold as You," obviously. Mm-hmm. And then this is really a dark horse. I put "Stay Beautiful." You are up in the middle of the night thinking about Corey's eyes being like a jungle and his smile like the radio. And then I put this one. I will fight tooth and nail. "You Belong With Me." Period.
Oh, yes. You know why? The bridge is so middle of the night. Yep. The clap, clap. Driving to my house.
It's
in the middle of the night.
It's a typical Tuesday night. It's a typical Tuesday night, everybody. I put "Enchanted," obviously. And then I put another dark horse, "Speak Now," the song.
I need you to stop with this list. "Speak Now," the song.
Listen, if you're in your room in the middle of the night and you're fantasizing about ruining the wedding that you're going to the next day, think about it.
Well, as you know what, as you say, sometimes the midnight songs don't pan out. So,
okay. Yeah, I'm over here arguing for it. I hate "Speak Now," the song, but I do think it could be a midnight tile song. I don't know. And then this to me is not a dark horse. This just makes sense. I put "Look What You Made Me Do."
Oh yeah. But I think "Look What You Made Me Do" was so manufactured. I think it was pieced together over time, but I think that she definitely came up with the "Look What You Made Me Do" title in the middle of the night. That's for sure.
Yeah. And then I have "Clean," but that's kind of like, oh, duh. I have "Style" too from 1989. That's also duh.
Yes. "Midnight. You come and pick me up. No headlights," literally, period.
And then that's all my songs.
Well, I think that we have painted a pretty good picture of what this album could sound like. We're not saying that they're going to sound like these songs, but they're going to have the tone, the urgency, the heat of the moment, the immediacy that these songs have. And, you know, it is her return to confessional songwriting. So I'm very, very excited about this.
I'm up in the moon. I think that a lot of people are sort of deluding themselves. I don't think that this is the third sister record. If it were,
oh, it's
it would
certainly
be,
not. I heard someone say that it was Lover's Side B, and I was like, Who are taking the piss.
Here's the thing is that another thing I kind of wanted to address is like, I don't think that any of these songs are going to be quote unquote old songs. I think that they're all going to be new because she doesn't have enough in the vault.
Oh,
to take 100%. Them away
these
from
are
from
all
the,
new songs.
Yeah,
they might be about old the things. They certainly are going to be about, they're going to cover old territory, but they're going to be new perspectives. And that's what I think is going to make this album so interesting and unique, is that, and I think she will go on to explain this in interviews because she'll want to cover her tracks. Also because she wants to keep the proprietary like vault track idea for the re-records. Otherwise the re-records have no value. But, you know,
well,
I think this is going to be really interesting.
I think that like in writing or in doing the re-records and like going back and like, I think that she's definitely doing some reflecting on the events that sort of like made her old songs like happen. And I think that in doing so, she was just like thinking about people, things, places that she had been to before. And I think that that's such a strong place to draw from because I mean, what happened with like Jake Gyllenhaal and John Mayer, like that's all shit that she barely even touched on. Like, even though she wrote so many songs about Jake
briefly
and John,
glazed over it
because she did like 2 years.
That's nothing. I mean, also a lot of this stuff would happen a year into her 2 year album cycle. So she would literally have like 8 months to come up with a perspective. And that's why songs like, I mean, Dear John and All Too Well really stand out, is because they have this kind of close to the subject acuity that is very, very touching and very like almost painful and hard to listen to. This is like, she's had the chance to reflect and process, and she'll definitely have like, I'm wondering if she's going to be examining her parts in different situations throughout life. Like, is it going to be a little bit more back to December vibe in that she's like being more critical of herself? I'm getting like a bit of an anguish, a torment in the visuals. Like she's looking frustrated, not with others,
regret.
But with herself. Yes. Like
I think
annoyed.
That regret, mistakes, stuff like that. I mean, I think that a lot of people get really hung up. I mean, even you and I, like we get hung up on like the relationships and stuff like that. But I think that there's more like, the regrets that like thinking about regrets that I have, not a lot of them are about relationships. A lot of them are about like deeper stuff than that.
Or
so
they're
it's, like,
about,
I think
even
that,
if the relationship was bad, it's your regret tends to linger on how you handled it or how you responded it or how you treated somebody. Those are the regrets that you have. And I think Nothing New is probably the most interesting example of a Midnight song, just because that is not about a relationship. It is not about a like specific situation. It's about a feeling that she has. It's about a temperament, the way she sees the world. You know, I think that Taylor is a glass half empty person that really wants to be a glass half full person. And Nothing New is a really good example of how that is her worldview that she's like constantly fighting against. She wants to be positive and upbeat and optimistic, but she has a very deep melancholic streak in her.
It's very true. I mean, she would be somebody who would, I mean, obviously stay up late in the middle of the night and not be able to sleep because she's thinking about something that happened 6 years ago.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Replaying
like she is definitely a lingerer and a thinker on the past.
Okay, so now I guess we can get into questions from our listeners. I put out a call on Instagram and we got a lot of messages, but 30% of them were, where's 2016? So
disrespectful.
Give me a break. Who are some possible producers and co-writers? Bitch, I don't know.
Karen Dessner. Period.
I don't think so.
That's
I don't think so.
No, that's her little bestie. I think he's going to be in a couple. No, you're wrong. I'm going to be right.
I think it's going to be Jack.
I can't wait to...
It's going to be Jack. Right. And I think we're going to get at least one new producer that works with her on more than one song. It's like, it's about time for her to introduce another collaborator into the mix. We had Liz Rose and Nathan Chapman for a while. Then after about like two records, she roped Max Martin into
Max
it.
Martin.
And then after that, she roped Jack Antonoff. Actually, no, she roped him in at the same time, but then she started giving him more feedback. Then Joel Little, you know, briefly for a second brought in and swiftly shunted out of the nest. I like the beat. Yeah, I like the beat. I actually didn't like the beat. That was the whole problem with the producers. Like, if you don't like the beat, then like they fail.
Well, here's the thing is that I think that the less you gave him, like the less you gave him to do, the better it would be. Like Miss Americana and the Heartbreak Bridge to me is a total Taylor Like that, she was all over that shit. Like whatever.
She was just "Have you heard Born to Die by Lana Del Rey? The record.
Yeah.
I want that.
That's the vibe. That's all you have to do. And then with the man and
well, he didn't actually didn't interfere with her. He didn't give her any ideas. That was the problem. Like Taylor doesn't need someone that will do exactly what she says. She needs someone that will ping pong with her a little bit. And I think that's why Jack and her and Aaron too have such fruitful collaborations, because she trusts them to bring her, like, for example, with Aaron, when she was writing to track, she hadn't really done a lot of that before, top line writing, where she just gets a complete song and writes a melody over it. And she trusted him enough to do that. So yeah, maybe I can see Aaron Dessner. I just haven't heard any of his like up-tempo production. I don't really know if that's in his wheelhouse, but then again, like he seems to be very versatile. So you could be right, but I'm thinking that this might have more female collaborators than we think. That was another rumor going along with the Stevie Nicks thing, was that there were going to be a lot of female collaborators. And there's that pic of Lana, Jack, and Taylor.
I think that, here's something what I'm going to say. In terms of like having a feature on the record, I'm at this point where I'm not fucking interested in the fucking features, because half the time they're just garbaggio. But Lana would be the fucking serve of the century. And it has been, like, that would be the number
it's
one.
It's cosmically divined, and there's no possible way that it can be good.
It was set aside at the beginning of time on the caves that Lana and Taylor would one day come together and create. And I think that if there were any record that they were going to do it, Midnights would be the one. But as for other features, I don't want it. I'm not interested.
No,
I'm sick of this.
I don't really. Everybody's like,
I don't want it.
I keep seeing people being like, do you want fucking Gracie Abrams or Conan Gray?
Who?
I'm literally like, get a job.
No.
Get a job.
Tell that man to get a fucking job. I remember when the rumor was
alone.
That Taylor,
Taylor
was
didn't.
Going
I don't think she even said hi to him at the VMAs, did she?
Well,
I don't think she even said hello.
The rumor that Taylor was going to the VMAs was spurred by a picture of the audience. You know, they have like the audience seats and they have people's pictures on them. It was Taylor Swift and Conan Gray was like behind her. And somebody was like, well, I know this isn't real because Conan Gray's name is spelled wrong. I was like, bitch, nobody knows who he is. Nobody knows how to spell his fucking name.
He's a nobody. He's a nothing and
he's
a nobody.
He's nothing. I don't care for that person.
I get questions every day being like, what do you think of Conan Gray? And I'm like, nothing. Also, what do you think of Sabrina Carpenter? I'm like, who are these?
Who
flops?
Is that? Now, this is like a whole subgenre of music right now.
Yeah, it is. React to Maisie Peters. I'm like, they're all the same person as well.
Who
they're all the same.
Are
they
these
make the same
little
songs.
People? They make
the only
the
one
same thing.
Who will stand the test of time and has anything worth giving is Olivia Rodrigo, and she's wisely taking it easy right now. So yeah, I mean, producers and co-writers, collaborators is hard to predict always, because she just makes such rogue decisions when it comes to that. A Stevie Nicks collab would be a dream, but that didn't go so well the last time. So,
I think that Stevie Nicks has been keeping her distance ever since then.
Well, Stevie Nicks is also in Boring Man's pocket. So I don't know if she's willing to like...
Hold on a second. Hold on. Who is the boring man? Who are we
Harry
talking about?
Harry Styles, duh.
Oh! Okay, all right, yep. No,
the boring man. That's just how we've got to refer to him now. How do you feel about this happening in the middle of the re-recordings? Well, my first instinct is to say that this isn't in the middle of the re-recordings, because the re-recordings is not a schedule. It is literally a random thing that
no,
she decided to do.
No,
she put out two albums in 2021, and we decided that there was a schedule. Out of two random events, we were like, oh, there's a correlation here. This will happen every year until all the re-recordings are done, which is just stupid.
It's just stupid.
I
we
like that
idiots.
The
Let's
re-recordings will come over time. That actually is a very nice feeling to me, because getting them all done at the same time, I just feel like that's too much food. Like I would just
well,
get so
I feel
full.
Like, I mean, you remember how rushed some of Fearless felt? I mean, it felt like she was in that studio, like forcing herself to do it. And it's just like, I mean, if she's not feeling it, then don't do it. Yes. I mean, there were more moments on Red where I felt like she was very committed and very into it, like Sad, Beautiful, Tragic, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that
Red,
she was afforded
crazy.
More. more creativity afforded to her, because she did have to make up the All Too Well 10. And she did have to, you know, she got Phoebe Bridgers in there, which I'm sure was super fun.
I love how you said make up the All Too Well 10.
Well, I mean, she did. I'm a truther. I know the truth.
she pieced together things that half existed.
Yeah. I mean, kind of like Midnights. That's probably where she got the whole fucking idea. She was like, hold on, I can literally do this. I can she's do like, this.
I can go into my notes app and read the stuff that I wrote down. Because you know that she's a meticulous documenter. So she definitely has all these unfinished projects. And it would be untruthful to put those on a vault track. That's just not correct. I prefer she does it this way.
I mean, she is an untruthful person to me.
It
hasn't stopped her before, but I think that she needs to reserve what she actually has in the vault for the vault tracks, which is exactly why I think all this is going to be
brand new.
Well,
also the vault tracks can be shit. This is what I've realized. They can be terrible because she can be like, well, yeah, they didn't make it onto the album for a reason. She should take the really good scraps and keep them for new stuff.
I feel like we are in, to use this term again, a renaissance of Taylor Swift content.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, I am living and loving and learning. Live, laugh, learn, baby.
Remember when we were saying that the re-recordings, we were like, time to pack it up. We were like folding the chairs, playing the music as the ship was sinking. But now I'm kind of thinking, I need to dig my heels in a little bit more. I need to pop an Adderall.
They're not, and like, I'm not going again. The ship. The ship is sailing. The sails are coming back up. We're getting the water out of the boat. Here we come.
Swerving the berg. We're going.
We're going.
What 13 Sleepless Nights and Scandals will be covered? Is it like a vault album? I think we've discussed this, but yeah, it is kind of like a vault album, but it's not from the vault. I think this is the thing. It is not from the vault. That's what I feel like we should all take away from it. What did you guys think of the hair at the VMAs?
Covered it, baby.
Wednesday Addams vibes?
Yeah.
How much do you actually think was written in the middle of the night? Is it just marketing?
To me, it's not about actually being written in the middle of the night. It's about feelings that she had in the middle of the night.
It is a spirit. And also, no song gets written to completion in the middle of the night, you crazy idiot.
No, she has an idea in the middle of the night.
She jots an idea down. And then she goes and finishes it later when she books her studio time with a producer. This is how the world works, baby. I've noticed that like we've kind of encouraged people to be like a little bit distrustful of Taylor, or just not to take everything she says at face value. And like, I totally stand by that, but I resent the idea that she like overtly lies. I just don't believe it. We like her. I think we need to remind people that we love her.
It's like when we're talking about like All Too Well 10 being a total fabrication, it's like, I'm not saying that it's a total lie. All I'm saying is the truth is in the song, but the lie is that it ever existed as a fully formed song. That's just not how it happened. I mean, and it's a better story for marketing to say it was 10 minutes and then I edited it down and this is for my fans.
Let them eat cake. Let them think All Too Well 10 existed, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, what's wrong with that? It's harmless. That's the thing. That's a harmless little lie. Anyway.
Saying that she's lying about writing stuff in the middle of the night, I think is like maybe missing the point a little bit. Question that I really can't get my head around this one is, what will the next tour be like? Girl.
None.
Don't fucking know.
None.
I don't know.
Okay, my honest opinion for everybody listening is that if there is going to be a next tour, it is going to be, I mean, a lot of, I part of me believes
well,
that
it's not going to be a tour.
Not gonna have,
that's the first part. It's not going to be a tour. She has pretty much said that she's not interested in being a globetrotter anymore. And that includes doing an entire continental USA tour. I think if we're going to get anything, it's going to be pretty much exactly what Loverfest was, like 3 or 4 really big, or maybe, you know, Lady Gaga's Chromatica Ball. Have you seen that? That was just like a couple stadiums around the world with like multiple nights in one place. I could see her doing something a little bit bigger like that, but I don't see her doing
And you know what? Yeah. I hate to bring up the boring man, but what he's doing in Madison Square Garden, I think is something that Taylor could easily do, not just in New York, but also in LA. I would honestly
I'd love to see
her.
I've been dying for a Vegas residency. I think it would be great. I think it
Vegas,
would be so
Vegas,
good.
Vegas. I would go there so hard.
If she did Vegas, she could do like, you know how Lady Gaga did her like Enigma show and then she did her jazz show as well at the same time on different weeks. Taylor could absolutely do a Folk Levermore, performance where it's like acoustic, it's intimate, it's like all seated, it's more relaxed vibes, not that Swifties will sit down. And then the hits, the bangers, the showstoppers, the newer stuff in another show. I could totally see her doing that. And that would give her the ability to like have some normalcy or some like constant in her life without, you know, sacrificing on people being able to go and see her. I don't know if I can like see her committing to anything for a length of time like that, though. I don't know if it's on the cards for her right now, but that really is something that I think she should look into.
Another thing that I kind of wanted to touch on is like, I don't know where this idea that tour is happening in the next year is coming from. I mean, I guess it's not completely out of pocket to imagine that she's going to do some shows.
Do you remember about 2 months ago, they were saying that Gillette Stadium was booked for summer 2023 for Taylor?
Yeah, I mean, they've been saying that for years.
Next tour, I really don't know. I'm really curious. She just has so much material at this point. Like, she's going to have to kill her darlings. Like, she cannot possibly do everything that people want to hear. Like, she couldn't even do a show just of the hits. It would be too long. She'd have to sacrifice some of them if she wanted to play any new stuff at all. And like, Folk Evermore is really not appropriate for a stadium event. So I don't know what a tour would look like.
My perfect fantasy, and I don't think that she would ever do this to the extent that I wish she would, maybe a little bit because she's so like, this is the show and this is a plan down to the second, but it would be really interesting if she did like a rotating show where like every night was different, but she would never do that. So why dream?
She wouldn't. I mean, her whole thing is like, she needs to know exactly where she's going and what she's doing every single night, but that would be amazing. Surprise songs, obviously, always want that to be a feature. Yeah. Will there be secret sessions? You guys are cooked. You guys are cooked. If you think this is the perfect, COVID is the perfect example for Taylor never have to invite crazy ass bitches into her house ever again. The Lover secret sessions were a shambles, and the Reputation ones had like various security breaches. I think with COVID now as well, I gather that Taylor is actually still being careful with COVID. Like, she has not met fans in years.
And she won't. I don't understand this delusion that people have.
Why would she? The risk of getting COVID is not worth it when she's in the middle of a promo cycle as well. Like, say she does. Okay, the secret sessions happen 2 weeks before release week, right? 2 or 3 weeks even. So imagine she's 3 weeks out. She invites 70 random strangers to her house. And not only does she have those strangers, she has all the security people traipsing in and out. She has all the venue people bringing in catering, all of this stuff. Think about how many people that is, how many things they touch in her home where she has to live.
Don't think about things
after
like
they leave. But this is what I mean. So she gets COVID at the, I don't know, Nashville secret sessions 3 weeks before promo. Then she has to postpone everything, loses a bunch of money, and can't even do the rest of the secret sessions to begin with. It's not realistic, babes.
I just don't understand. A lot of people have said she's just going to do fan events from now on, like what she did with the All Too Well thing, which is like totally true. That is literally what you're getting from here on out. And you should be thankful and grateful.
Intimate shows, intimate sets, sure. Meeting, hugging, kissing, taking
dare
pictures.
Dare to dream.
If you dream it, you can achieve it. At the VMAs, Mackenzie randomly pointed out to me in my DMs today or in my replies today that at the VMAs, she was, instead of touching people's hands, she was aiming her moon man face down into the crowd and being like, hi, she's not touching you. She has an excuse. She no longer has to rub elbows with the unwashed masses.
And you know what? It's good
her?
For her.
I don't want to touch a bunch of random people. No,
I understand if that disappoints you, et cetera, et cetera. I have since grown and, you know, lived and loved, and it is of absolutely no interest to me.
You've
to
changed
on the Twitter,
but you're still the same.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just not, I have way too much pride. I'm way too grown to be sitting around begging for a secret session invite. No. Who's doing that?
They're not happening. The reason, fact that people are legitimately, and you know, people that have been around the block a couple times are already begging, all digital begging, cup shaking at Taylor and Taylor Nation. I mean, come on, girls. It's.
Do you remember that one girl who was like, multiple girls actually, but one sticks out, who was like, Taylor, my wedding is next week. It would be so cool if you showed up. Who? What? This was in like last year.
Who are you? I remember.
Who do you think? Going to your wedding?
Who are you talking to?
Your fucking super.
Did you
wedding?
Ever hear about the girls who live in delusion? I have. I think they're going to a secret session.
It's just ballistic to me.
Well, I think our answer to that is, will there be secret sessions? I'm going to give it like a 90% no. You never know. They are secret. They are secret.
I think that the boat has gone. I think that the boat has gone. And I think that she's never going to outright say there will never be secret sessions, just to kind of keep the moment alive. But there will never be secret sessions again. I mean, come on, girlies. I mean, maybe in 10 years.
Probably not. Yeah. And I couldn't blame her. I really couldn't blame her.
Imagine I meet Taylor, but I'm like 40. That would be tea.
I would gag. It would be amazing.
Yeah, I would gag.
We would just be getting around to our 2020 episode.
Yeah.
Do you think this will be a full era like Lover? Interviews, singles, music videos, and performances?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I've been thinking about that myself. A lot of people seem to think that this is going to be an entire fucking era. But as I said before, I think that as close as we're going to get to this being an
entire
era.
Rumors of a visual album?
Really? Who said that?
People say. Well, rumors.
Who said that?
Tweets and tweets.
Oh, that would be a serve.
You know what? But she's kind of laying it up like that, as in no single, but lots of aesthetic, no track titles, a release date, but no like confirmation as to what exactly. A short-ish album with two distinct sides. I mean, it's possible. But I mean, in terms of like a full era, I think we might get a half era. I think
what we saw with the Red re-release was pretty much what we're gonna get. She did do she went to talk shows. She went on SNL.
She showed up.
She was palling around with people. I think that's and it was I liked it. I thought it was great. I mean, it wasn't oversaturation, and it was just enough. She was serving looks. She's being Taylor. I enjoyed it. I thought that was great. So I hope.
Well, the thing is, we
like
have
that.
A really long runway now. And I don't understand why she would announce it if she wasn't intending to do promo. So she's definitely doing it.
Yeah, she's definitely doing it. I mean, she's already on TikTok talking about the fucking...
You know what's going to be really a tell of how big this era is going to be is if she has a big partner. Like if she has another Diet Coke sponsorship, or if she has a Polaroid moment, like a collaboration Polaroid.
Her collaboration with like the Crosley record players or whatever. It's like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
No, I think any product integration, USPS, remember that?
Come on. Or when she did the Amazon boxes.
Yeah, that's when you know she's really
people were just like ordering shit off Amazon, desperately trying to get a Lover box.
Me,
like, come on, guys, Amazon.
I mean, TBD. Do you think that artists are told what awards they're going to win in advance? This has all been confirmed by other artists. I think 21 Pilots actually were the ones that like most recently blew the lid on this, but VMAs are told, like, you know what you're going to win. They're fan voted. Like, you know, the results come in a couple days before. So I think, yeah, they do know. And let me tell you, if Taylor wasn't winning, do you think she would be showing up? No fucking way. Most of the time she wins and doesn't come. If she wins something and it happens to coincide with her needing to promote something, she'll go. But for example, if she needed to promote something and she didn't win, she wouldn't go.
Right. Her showing up at all to me was a big tell that she was going to, like, why would you go to the VMAs if you weren't going to win? You know, like that's the kind of thing where it's like, what do you go to be embarrassed? No, you got to win something. Anyway,
yeah, well,
it's different.
Maybe Katy Perry goes to be embarrassed, but like Taylor doesn't.
Well, Katy Perry seems to have a pretty high threshold for like humiliation. So I don't know. Yeah.
Thoughts on Nicki not thanking Taylor? No
and
thoughts.
She said, no. Didn't Nicki say that Taylor made Superbass what it was? Hasn't she said that again and
Nicki
again
has said
and again
that over and over and over again?
How many
I think
times
she's
does
been,
she have to say it? To
she's been
you?
Pretty profuse with her thanks for Taylor, and the most gracious thing she ever did was not body her and eat her alive in 2015.
that's all, really all that she has to do for Taylor.
That's anymore. All the grace that she needs to extend to.
But I do think that Taylor was like going over the top with the Nikki support because she knew that if she didn't, people were going to roast her fucking asshole. So I think that a lot of it was.
Well, people roasted her for supporting Nikki anyway. So it's a lose-lose situation.
Well, I mean, I don't, the Nikki thing is sort of like,
we can't even touch that. No, thank you.
I'm not even touching it. It's just no, I can't. It's too much. Nope. Like I'm not. I'm giving her the side eye personally because it's fucked up. But I don't know enough to be like cancel. And she never will be canceled anyway because she's Nicki Minaj. So what does it matter?
Unfortunately, I am a super freaky girl.
I've like barely heard the song.
Oh, it's so good. It's like trash, but it's so good.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on the Blue Star after party look? Oh my God.
Oh, love.
That one was more shocking to me than the red carpet look because I wasn't expecting two things in one night.
Right.
And that one I also really thought was a Mermaid Swift edit. Like it looks
she's
not
got
like
the
her.
Hair. She's got the fur. She's got the shoe.
I know.
She's got her little fucking
she
romper.
Woke up that day and she said, "I'm sick and tired of not serving. It's been so long and it's time for me to smell."
Right. What I loved about the look was how directly it played into the theme of Midnights. She's got midnight blue with stars. And not only that, but it matched the theming of the record in that it's like sort of like old timey, kind of like elegant, but sexy. You know what I mean? Like
shoes.
She could have been wearing that. Like if it was a gown, she could have been at like the 1950s.
It's
Oscar
just the hair.
Thing.
She's really been doing an atrocious hair phase at the moment. And it's not because her hair is bad. It's because she's not trying.
Well, I'm kind of thinking to myself, like if maybe she has damaged her hair beyond the point of repair. And
she
now
hasn't colored
it
in a really long time.
Yeah. So I don't know if like she, it's like product heat.
Someone
I don't know
messaged me saying, "Do you think she's messed up her natural curl pattern?" And I didn't really know what that meant, but now I'm kind of like seeing it. Did she purposely choose Kim's birthday for the release? Girl, no, please.
Is that Kim? Is that, who knows that? Who knows
it's
that information? Who cares?
She's releasing it on Kim's birthday. Who fucking cares?
She's also releasing it on the same day as the Arctic Monkeys album. Who cares about that?
No one cares. See, here's the thing that you guys don't understand. She has been releasing her albums in like a 2-week radius for about, I don't know, 12, 13 years by now. 15 years since debut, I guess. She is literally like, it's really not, if you look at the fluctuations in the dates, it's within days sometimes. Like Speak Now was like what? Like the 25th, 1989 was like the 27th. This is the 21st. Like, I mean, come on, girls.
And there's a reason for it. Like there's specific reasons within the music industry to release at the times when people release.
Especially
they're
for
picked
Taylor.
Very consciously, and nobody is on Google saying when is Kim Kardashian's birthday? Not a single person in that room is
not
doing
Taylor
that.
Swift.
It's like
also, if she knew it was only after she had decided, and I'm sure that her only thought about that was, oh, well.
LOL, what can you do? But it's like when Reputation came out, it was on the anniversary of Kanye West's mom's death. It's like, who knows that? Nobody knows. Who is
Or when she put her catalog Googling? Back on streaming the day that Witness was being released, I'm kind of convinced that might have been on purpose.
That was a little something. Just a little bit of spice for the taco.
Whoa,
you know what I mean? Just
she deserved it.
A little jalapeno pepper in there. But otherwise, it's like, I remember when, I think it was either Evermore or Folklore that was being released on the same day as Kid Cudi's record. And everyone was like, Taylor's a bitch for this. She's ruining it. And it's like, all I'm reading is that Taylor is so powerful that she can ruin somebody else's life just by releasing an album.
It's
like Kid Cudi, I can't think of somebody who would care less about that. Like, he doesn't give a shit.
This is the thing that people don't realize as well. Taylor Swift is a booked and busy person. She doesn't have time to be sitting around thinking, who can I piss off today? If that's anyone's job, it's Tree Payne's job. It's not Taylor's. Exactly. And Tree Payne has finally started to do her fucking job.
I kind of don't like her. Is that weird?
The response to the Jet discourse was really off-putting to me, and that reeked of a Tree spin. And like, Tree is actually, for a publicist, she's really bad at spinning things. Like, she almost always makes Taylor sound more sanctimonious than she did in the first place.
Tree's response to pretty much everything has been whack-a-doodle-doo. Like, even to fucking Snakegate.
The fact that she had a job after Snakegate was crazy to me. And, you know, it's in black and white, too. Like, the discrepancy, what the whole argument about, is something that Tree added in to Tree's statement on behalf of Taylor. Not even in ghostwriting Taylor's own statement, in Tree's statement. So, like, I don't get how she still has a job. I mean, obviously, she must be doing something, right? Because Taylor's slaying, but that has more to do with Taylor than Tree.
Totally agree. And I also, I mean,
I think Taylor doesn't like Tree as well. Taylor looks at Tree like a slave. She's like the bug under her shoe. Every time she sees her, she's like, shut up. Do what I tell you to do. Go get me water with a straw in it.
Literally.
Give me my gloss.
Carry my clutch, will you? Be a peach and carry my clutch.
Send an Instagram story. Yeah. Well, I think that kind of wraps it up. We've been going for a while. That was a fun episode.
That was a good episode. You know what? We're just in here shooting the fucking shit. What do we think is going to happen? But I will tell you this. It has made me very, very hungry and thirsty for the content.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Evolution of a Snake. You can find us on Instagram at Evolution of a Snake. And you can find us on BuyMeACoffee.com/TheSnakes to contribute to our continued fund and demand the episode 2016. We'll see you in the next one. Goodbye, Swifties.